Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gear Priority Podcast. My name is Justin, and I am your host. I am joined today by Matteo Favaro from ZPAX to talk about the direction of ultralight gear. Does it make sense to keep adding features as companies decrease the weight of products? Where does Matteo see tent innovation going, and how could an ultralight approach to gear design still address some of the lingering pain points people might be having with backpacking? Hello, Matteo. Welcome to the podcast. Where are you calling in from for the people at home?
Hey, what's up? Sunny Melbourne, Florida, the ideal spot for backpacking.
I was gonna say, I already knew that you're down in Florida, and I was curious, like, does hiking and backpacking pretty much, like, stop through the summer months because of the heat?
Yeah, it's non-existent. You basically can only hike on the Florida Trail from, like, even sometimes it's, you can't even do this, but, like, end of December to, like, the middle of February, very, very short. Even then, you can still have 80-degree days, especially, or even in the 90s down south, yeah.
Oh, wow. So you're kind of like, you're getting close to hiking season, I guess, now that fall's almost here?
Yeah, sometimes you'll get a couple cool weekends starting in late October, but mostly you can't really till December hit the trail, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's kind of the, yeah, definitely a different vibe up here in the Canadian Rockies. I'm about a month away from winter camping starting and snow in the mountains, and I'm brushing off my X-Therm and minus 40 bag, and
it's whole nother world.
Yeah, in a different way. Yeah.
Whole nother world.
Before we kind of jump into the main topic, will you be able to share a little bit about what your role is at ZPAX and what you get up to over there?
Yeah, so I am the director of marketing. So I mean, I got a small team. Customer services underneath me, social media, all the emails, SMS, I mean, any advertising, affiliate programs, all that stuff falls under the marketing umbrella. And also design as well. Design is part of the marketing team as well. So I spent quite a bit of my time with the owner, Joe, and we have a design specialist, Janine, who we really work together, the three of us, quite a bit. We have two really long sessions every week where we go through some designs and figure out things we want to tweak, change, new products we want to introduce. We talk through it, figure out what we want to do. Then Janine and some other people will take those ideas and those things and start getting us things to look at and get our hands on and figure out if we want to continue this or change that. So that's my favorite part.
Yeah. Like, you're one of the first employees at ZPAX, right? Or are you the first hire?
So it was Joe, our owner, and his wife, Cheryl, and I was the first person they hired. I mean, you could technically say Cheryl was the first employee, but I mean, I was the first one that got hired, and they got a paycheck, I guess.
And yeah, I kind of get the impression that you wear a few different hats over at ZPAX and probably get your hands dirty in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah, so I think that's just kind of how it goes when you've been at a place so long. It's been 13 years now. So as we've grown, I've literally done just about every job. I started sewing, then I was in charge of backpacks, and then I was running the shop and doing hiring and payroll, and then customer service. Like, literally, I've done every job basically. And so that gives me a perspective, especially with the historical, like, knowledge that I have of, like, being able to, like, assist, which I try not to step on toes and get in the way. I'm not always successful at that, but I'm always trying to help and give some perspective or be like, oh, we tried that before, and this is what we ran into with, like, somebody newer who won't have that knowledge, you know. A lot of things that seem intuitive don't always work and the way that we do things.
Yeah, makes sense. And it's probably pretty useful having kind of you who have been around for so long to kind of help guide things in that way. In just a couple minutes, can you give us the history of ZPAX, I guess, just for the people who may not be as familiar with how you guys got started and a little bit of the journey up until now?
Yeah, I think it's the classic scratch your own itch type of scenario. Basically, our owner, Joe Velasco, decided when he graduated college he was going to go hike the AT, and so that was in 2004. And so he was looking at gear to buy to take on the AT, and he was like, This is all heavy. This is like, it's, why is this buckle here? Why is this webbing here? And he was just like, this is like, it's overbuilt. There's too much here. And so like he had the audacity to think he could do better. And so he sat down and he built his own set of gear, and he ended up heading out on the AT with it. And he realized pretty quick that it wasn't that great. And so like he came home from the AT to build the second set of gear. And then eventually he had, by the end, most of the stuff was on the third iteration. But as he was getting close to the end, he kind of had the proof of concept that you could do a through hike with this type of gear. And so other people saw what he had, and it was like, hey, will you make this for me? Like, when we get done, will you make this? And he was kind of like, I guess. And so like after he came, you know, finished, he got a real job, and he started making gear like at his kitchen table after work. And then, you know, the demand got higher and higher, and eventually, you know, come 2010 is when he was able to go full time and, like, you know, it'd be his only job.
That's cool. Is it like PAX Intense? Cause that's kind of, I think, what Z-PAX is mostly known for. You guys have a pretty broad product line, but do you start off with PAX Intense, or is it some other piece of gear?
Yeah, mainly backpacks Intense. I mean, obviously you can have stuff stacks and things like that, the smaller accessories, but yeah, it was mainly just PAX Intense. And then it was probably another year and a half, 2 years before we started making sleeping bags.
Okay. And so I do have a question for you. I've been doing rapid fire questions with all the guests, and I've one for this, and that's what your favorite Z-PAX product is. And this one's usually been a tough question for the people who are actually involved with the brands and everything, because there's, especially with, like, Z-PAX is a whole bunch of different items. Pretty cool gear.
So we've got just about everything, so it's really tough. I like my Nero backpack, my Nero Ultra backpack. I mean, I could make an argument for just about anything, but just over time, trying every single size pack we have, like, I just feel like I've found the pack that it's comfortable, it's the right volume, it's got all the features I need and nothing more. So like that's kind of my go-to pack right now. Yeah.
So you like a pretty minimalist pack. So like we're gonna get into it as far as like you guys have some gear like the Arcall, which is a pretty feature rich pack, and then you have the Nero, which is I'd consider a pretty minimalist pack as far as you know, there's not a lot of bells and whistles on it. It's just kind of a dialed in minimalist pack.
Yeah, I don't want to break. It's like the more you add, the more complexity you add, just the more things that could potentially break or fail, or you depend. It's just like, I don't need that. My pack is like, my base weight is like basically never more than 10 pounds. So it's like, I don't need like all this extra stuff. Like I have a pretty dialed in kit, like you said. So I'd rather go fast and be compact, go underneath trees and not get my pack caught on things, or like, you know, when you're dancing around blowdowns, it's just keep compact and small and simple. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I like this, a similar approach. I like to go fast and light, and like be nimble. Like when you have a light pack like that, I use the Sub Nero and had about 10 pounds total in it with food and water. I was able to kind of jump across rocks. It felt like a gazelle out there prancing around. It was great. So it's, yeah, I definitely get where you're coming from. But also know that that's not for everyone. A lot of people, they like to bring like 30, 40 pounds of gear kind of no matter what.
And, yeah. I mean, there's no right or wrong way. It's like just because I'm live the ultra light lifestyle when I go out, like I do always have to remind people, like, don't shame people. Like, it's about whatever makes you comfortable, and if that's what those people need to feel comfortable and to think that they're doing it right, then that's what they need, like, you know. But I just think to myself, like, if I had to carry 45 or 50 pounds all day every day, I wouldn't be doing it. Was like I would not be having enough fun to justify the experience, you know. But for other people, I mean, I see people 70 pound plus packs. I'm like, how are they doing that? So much more impressive. Somebody hikes 30 miles with like a 12 pound pack. To me, that's like nothing compared to somebody who did 15 miles with a 70 pound pack. I'm like, that guy busted his ass way more than us. Yeah,
especially throw some elevation in there. I carried the heaviest pack I've ever carried at 55 pounds on one of my recent trips, and it was not a lot. Like, we didn't do long days, but there was quite a bit of elevation, and I was surprised at how much that 55 pounds kick my butt, because like you said, there's a lot of people out there carrying more weight and up distances. It's kind of crazy.
Getting crushed. I don't know. True masochist.
I want to jump into a little bit behind the scenes with Z-Packs, because Z-Packs is a pretty big company now, and it's not gigantic, but I'm curious as far as Z-Packs has kind of maintained a direct consumer model for making UL products, which has it been tempting to kind of create a more mainstream product in order to kind of maybe take more market share from something like somebody like Osprey or Deuter or those guys, and sell in like big box stores like REI and things like that?
Well, I think you got to start with our reality. Our reality is we're made in the United States, and the majority of the cost of everything we make is labor. And that's, the cost of American labor. So I was telling somebody a couple of weeks ago that if you gave us the material for free, like just free material, and we made a backpack, it would still be expensive because of everything that goes into making that and supporting the overhead and infrastructure of the company. So it's like, one, even if we wanted to be in a ton of big box stores, it wouldn't be with our core items that are made in the US. Like, we just don't have the margins to really support that. And then there's the flip side of that is when you start to tiptoe into a more of a mainstream audience like that, is you're really getting into a market that's flooded with a lot of brands and a lot of established brands. So it's like scratching and clawing to try to take market share away from these big brands who aren't made in the US and who have 400% margins and things like that. And their marketing budget is like 15 times what we make in a year. It's like, that's a tough sell. Like if you're trying to fight against North Face and what they're paying for their Google ads to sell a similar product, is like, good luck. You're just going to get crushed. So, I mean, I think we found that when we have tried to tiptoe outside of our space, forget the big box part. When we try to tiptoe outside of the space, it's really hard. It's really hard to gain traction. Even if you got a product that's a home run, I think it's really hard to gain traction. So I think building stuff that's centered around long distance adventuring, it doesn't necessarily have to be hiking, but building stuff around long distance adventuring really usually works out better for us. And I kind of make the analogy that when I talk about the type of customers that our typical customer is now, it's like, they're race car drivers, basically. It's like they're high performance. They're looking to go fast with like the best stuff. Well, a Corvette doesn't handle barely brush end like a light pole really, really that well. It'll explode. You know what I'm saying? It's not a Corolla, right? You know what I'm saying? So it's not really focused on a mass market. Yeah, a lot of people could use it, but a lot of people also wouldn't know how to use it. Like you wouldn't buy a 16-year-old a Mustang because they would press the gas and the back end would come out from under them and they get in an accident. You got to kind of, it's for more of a semi-pro type of thing or aspiring pro. It's like people who have that kind of mindset where they're like, I like this. I want to take this to the next level. I'm ready to do this at like the highest level possible. And with that, I need to upgrade my gear. You don't always have to upgrade your gear, but I need to like get serious about my gear choices and figure out how can I shave weight, get smaller volume sizes so that I can maximize each day that I have out on the trail. And I think there's that market's not big enough to be stealing market share away from North Face inside an REI. I don't think there's always like ancillary items that might do okay, but like the bread and butter is like high performance, gear is the way I at least like to what I tell myself when I come to work every day.
And there's, like you said, there's some skill involved with using some of these products as well. that you need to have, and you need to be aware of them. Like most people, if they grew up over the last like 10, 20 years, car camping and using kind of traditional gear, it's going to be probably a big leap to jump, whether it's Z-Packs or any kind of ultralight brand, to jump right into that gear using like a quilt, using a trekking pole tent, ultralight pack, where you may or may not have a hip belt kind of thing. There's some skills involved with that. And have you guys seen, as far as like with more information being out there through avenues like YouTube, social media, have you seen like people, they're able to build those skills without necessary and awareness without necessarily like having grown up with it, or maybe now we are seeing a generation that is growing up with trekking pole tents is more front and center in certain ways?
Yes, to a degree. I'd say for sure, to a degree. And like, this is not to offend anybody, but it's just like, what's an interesting thing is every year we go to trail days on the Appalachian Trail, and then we go to PCT days on the Pacific Crest Trail. Even then, the typical thru-hiker from, you know, there's a ton of overlap year over year, but I'd say the typical thru-hiker that you see on the AT versus the PCT is totally different. It feels like what you see on the PCT are the people on the West Coast is much more kind of like a dialed in, refined. They understand the benefits of ultralight hiking a little bit more. And then like, so there's definitely a lot more people leaning ultralight on the Pacific Crest Trail. Then you see a lot more of those traditional super heavy packs on the AT. And it's like, even then it's like you have thru hikers, but they're doing different trails and they have, it's like totally different approaches, and the majority is totally different. You see way less ultralight thru hikers, at least at the beginning, on the AT than you do on the PCT. And it's just a wild to think that, like, you wouldn't think there would be that much of a difference, but I think just there's a certain mindset that or people do a little bit more research or have a little bit more exposure as they're getting into it on the West Coast, maybe than they would have on the East Coast. But overall, I'd say the craziest thing to navigate, especially from a marketing standpoint too, is in the 13 years I've been here, our average customer, totally different. Our average customer in like 2010 was a masochist, minimalist, DIY. I'm trying to build my own thing, but I can't build this particular thing. I want you to use it. They were trying to push every limit, every boundary. Their level of acceptance for discomfort, I'm not going to say pain, but discomfort. I'm willing to sacrifice discomfort in exchange for longer miles or a lighter pack or like whatever. Like whenever the discomfort, you know, exchange was there, those original customers were really pushing boundaries and really like, so what they were willing to accept in terms of even quality of the finish, they're like, I don't care if the finish is nice. Is it going to do the job? That's all I care about. I'm concerned about the weight, and that's it. That's the only thing. And now you move forward and it's like best backpack. And there's like on Google, there'll be like 15 lists of the top 10 best backpacks and or tents or whatever. And like, you know, Z-Packs is in quite a few of those lists. And then like all of a sudden people who are like, I heard about a trail and I heard about this thing. I think I want to do it. And then like they're leaning on the expertise of all these people before them, but they don't have any expertise themselves. So now you get a lot of people who are a lot less experienced and they may not understand all the time what they're getting into. Or the potential sacrifices of, like you said, you grew up car camping, you're like, a tent has this much space, or like my sleeping bag is like this, or whatever, you know, each individual product you could point out, but they have a different experience and that changes their expectation. Whereas like through experience, I always make the corny little thing, the most important thing you can put in your pack is experience, because that's the thing that lets you know, like, I need this, I don't need this, or, you know, it helps you refine it. And without that knowledge of what you need for you personally to feel comfortable and to feel safe and to enjoy yourself, you don't know it yet. And so people are like kind of rushing into, maybe the pendulum goes a little bit too ultralight, too fast for them, right? And so, like, you see that a lot more now.
Has that affected the design philosophy over at ZPAX? Like, as you see that shift in customer, are you changing some of the, like, tweaking the products a little bit in order to maybe be a little bit more user-friendly in some ways, or adjust them so that they don't need that, like, as much experience in the pack?
Yeah. We're always listening. I definitely say that. And we're always making silent changes and things like that. If there is something we can change to make something more universally appealing without sacrificing function or weight, then we will do that, obviously, because we're listening. That, like, we shoot ourselves in the foot. Like, it drives me crazy. It's not my decision, right? It's it. But our owner, and I can't disagree with the philosophy, is because we're made in the U.S. and we're not ordering 5,000 of something, and then when it shows up, we got to sell 5,000 of them before we can have the next version, is, you know, we keep limited stock on purpose, just enough runway. So it's like, we need to change this, or, oh, it would be a good idea to change this. We initiate the engineering change order, and then, like, you know, a couple weeks to, like, a month later, every new item has that change. But we don't save up all 10 of them and then be like, oh, this is the 2024 version. It's like they're constantly having a little tweak. So it's like, I can't say that. I can't be like, oh, 2024 version, we did this, we did this, we did this. Because all these little things are just constantly happening to make those products better and to refine those products. So that is...
As someone who reviews gear, it is an interesting aspect to kind of keep in mind. Because I've looked at, like the Arcall, for example. I feel like the Arcall is... been such a iterative pack over the course of, like, the last 5 years. Like, the amount of little minor changes and even major changes have been significant. And someone told me, like, had a comment about the Arcall from 2 years ago, and I was like, it's probably a very different pack now than what you used before. So people just need to kind of keep that in mind. And, like, even things like the adjustable shoulder torso length with the Arcall is a feature that I didn't even know was on the Arcall until it showed up.
It's been there a while. I mean, we've been using it. It was on the Arc Black. I can't put a year on it to say everything blurs together, but quite a while.
I feel like you got, with some of these changes, you guys need to be shouting out the benefits of them a little bit more out there. It's because they're cool, like adjustable torso length and trampoline back on a ultralight pack is pretty much non-existent other than in that one pack.
And you want to know something that's crazy, that this wasn't something we were thinking about, it's just something that is with the adjustable shoulder straps. They're independently adjustable, okay? And so as you would guess, well, this wasn't really on our radar though. People aren't symmetrical. So some people are like, oh, I broke my collarbone and this side's up a little bit or what. So it's like, you can lock in the pack based on your body by them being independently adjustable. And I've seen, and we've had customers be like, I've never found a pack where I can get the shoulder straps to work because, like, I'm crooked, but all the things are designed to be symmetrical. And it's like, no, you can, like, do whatever you need to do to, like, get them locked into your body. And like I said, that wasn't even a consideration we were making. He was just like, oh, this is the easiest way to do it for both sides instead of trying to make one piece that came across. It was a minimalist approach, and it just worked out, right? And it's just like, oh, there's so many cool little things like that, like, everywhere.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I have that exact issue. I separated my shoulder on the right side and then broke my left collarbone, so I have about a 2-inch difference between my left and right shoulder.
Yeah, you could literally go.
Yeah, and I haven't done that on the Arcall yet, but I'm gonna go try that out, because I always find, like, my right shoulder, because I adjust it more for my left shoulder, that my right shoulder kind of feels a little off with any pack that I use. So I'm gonna try that on the next.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great tip and feature. I wanted to kind of test on, like, ZPAX kind of constantly iterating, but even outside of that iteration, I feel like we're last, like, year, 2 years. You guys have been releasing a lot of products. Do you go? What sparks kind of that new release? Like, do you guys go through phases of design, test, produce, or kind of, are you always thinking of the design and what's going to be released? What's kind of sparked that cadence?
I mean, a little bit is always scratching our own itch, right? I mean, we have to start there. It's like, man, I really like this. Like, I'd like to make that. or like, you know, like inspiration from everywhere. You know, oh, I saw this feature on this thing somewhere, and I thought that would be a cool idea to do that. So let's see. What would that look like if we did it the ZPax way? Like, right? So we're always just looking at ways to make our stuff better, but then we're also listening to a lot of feedback and being like, okay, well, what are the customers asking for that we don't have? And kind of Joe, our owner, has this, it's kind of silly. He'd be like, if three people ask for the same thing, we'll start looking at it. Basically, it's like, that's it. The bar is, so everybody out there, if you want something, just get three people to send an email and we'll start looking at it. But that's the thing, is like, okay, enough of our customers like want this, so it's worth exploring. Let's look. And then sometimes it's like, that's not something we can make it in a way where like anybody would buy it for the price it's going to cost us. And sometimes it is. That's a lot of those silent changes come from there as well. But I think, you know, that's what you see with the duplex zip. It was like, I'm so tired of like, I hate that rainbow zipper. I hate the rainbow zipper. Why don't you make something with an L zipper? I hate the rainbow zipper. And so then we did a poll where we had a bunch of different zipper types that the rainbow zipper won, by the way. But of all the things that we had on there, it was almost evenly split between three different styles. And that's like, are you kidding? Every time we do a poll or an A-B test, there is no meaningful information. They all end up with a percentage, like one or two of each other. But anyway, so rainbow zipper won, L zipper was second. But you can't have an L zipper with the pole in the middle, so we didn't do that. But we did, the zip had the zippered storm doors, and the zippered storm doors. Actually, we added the vent. So we tried to do that, which is funny too, is that when that came out, whatever, you get the initial surge. But right now, because we didn't get rid of the original duplex, sells close to 50-50. Like, there's a group of people who are like, I don't want that. A zipper can fail. I don't want another thing to fail. The original duplex is the lightest two-person tent. It's been proven for a decade. There was nothing wrong with it. They let the people who want zippered storm doors get their zippered storm doors. I want this. And it's like, there you go. Like, so it's like, just because people jump up and down and hoot and holler doesn't mean that is actually what the whole wants. We learned stuff like that, but whatever. So
yeah, I'm glad you guys kept the original duplex as well, because I'm one of those people who I really like the lack of zipper and the simplicity and kind of like almost durability aspect of that, like the fact that you can take it out into a desert, you don't need to worry about sand. If it gets a little muddy, it's not gonna like fail on you. It's I like the no zipper. It's nice. It kind of just simple and easy to use.
It's solid. And the only thing, and we came out with the ability to do it. The only thing I would have changed on any of those overlapping storm door tents is I also, for full disclosure, I watched your X-Men Pro 2 video right before this. And just like, I didn't realize it was getting me so emotionally upset, but no, I'm just kidding. where you alluded to the toggle, it's like, that's the only thing that I would change. And then I'm like, well, we came out with a stick-on magnet toggle, so there you go. You want to update it, upgrade your tent to that, there you go. $6 a toggle and you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think, yeah, if people haven't seen the video, I did a very, very kind of loose comparison talking about the X-Vid Pro 2 and the duplex. I think something that I don't think got across to enough people in the video, at least based on the comments, was that I think, and you kind of hinted at a little bit, is like, I think companies are kind of taking ideas, putting their own spin on them. And sometimes things get labeled as like copying. It's like, I definitely saw some people out there being like, oh, the duplex zip is just like, it's a copy. But I think it's more like you said, as far as a company taking a product are taking an idea and putting their own spin on it. And it's only a good thing for the consumer for there to be more features on products and more innovation kind of getting broadly applied.
Yeah, there's a weird thing that happens in our space, especially with tent manufacturers. This is going to be as much as I can not like say a name or anything, names, is like people think they invented everything. It's like no one in our space in the ultralight tent market was the first person to put a zipper on storm doors. They weren't the first person to put magnet toggles on a tent. They weren't the first person to have an L-shaped zipper. They weren't the first person to have a vent in their tent. It's like who like we're humble enough to realize none of us did this. All we're doing is scratching our own itches and taking inspiration from the great tent makers throughout the history of we had the crossed X things at the top that made a flat panel. It's like we did a trademark search for that, and they didn't use the X panel. Somebody made a flat tent like that in the 20s. It's like no, like we're none of us are that original, bro. Like offset tent poles. Nobody in our space was the first person to do that. It's like anyone is claiming like somehow that they were like this great innovator who came up with this unique idea that never had been seen. It's just not true. It's like what are we really doing in our space? We're taking the best materials and then individually choosing what we think are optimal feature sets and then putting them together in a way that we think will resonate with long distance adventurers. That's what we're doing. And like, it's different for every person's optimal feature set for them is different. And so if ours works for you, hell yeah, we nailed it. If somebody else has worked for you, heck yeah. Like, as long as that product, and I hope the companies, the people behind the companies, as long as their genuine intent is to make your experience in the outdoors better and not just make money off of you, then like, that's awesome. Like this, the space has a lot of great companies run by great people who are interested in like promoting a better experience. And like, as long as that's what we're doing, then let's do it. Like, it's so silly. Some of this nonsense I hear. I've had somebody at PCD days come up to me and literally be like, oh, that offset dual. It's like, it's a clone of my tent. And I looked up the tent and I was like, dude, literally the foot end of our tent is a completely different tent. It's like not even close to what you're doing. And I was like, but you know, it's just like, what was that? Like, I don't know.
I can see it being tough from a manufacturing standpoint to some like at a brand standpoint to sometimes be like bombarded with those kind of things. I see it on like the reviewer and creator side of things, just those comments out there. And a lot of them are very, like they're baseless, and they're either baseless or they just, I agree that they kind of just don't matter. Like, I think there's enough abundance out there for a bunch of different brands to be innovating and pushing each other and taking inspiration. I think it's great. I don't know why consumers get upset, because if anything, all this just benefits them in the long run. We don't want just a bunch of people just not taking inspiration or not innovating and everything.
Terrible. I think you said something in that video that like was so true on a personal level. I'm trying not to get myself in trouble. It is like some of these companies might have been resting on their laurels, right? It was like the Duplex was a dominant tent for a decade, and there we should have been iterating and taking some of the feedback much sooner than we did. And like the competition aspect forced us to do what we should have been doing long ago. Well, I don't know how long, but whatever. At least a few years, right? And so it's like, hell yeah. And now where are we at? I look at our offset duo tent and like you made a comment that you thought someone may overtake us as the most popular tent on the trail for long distance hiking. And I think before the offset duo, you may have been right. I think you may have been onto something. But now you stand up a tent that weighs the exact same as the tent you were talking about with exponentially more space. And I'm, oh, whatever. I won't say anymore. It's like, obviously we're all gonna advocate for our own products, right? I'm not trying to sell anybody, but it's just like it gets me excited. It gets me excited to know that like we, for the first time in a decade, I can get that excited about a new tent, right?
Yeah, it's awesome to see. It's cool. It's like, and it's, I love seeing that. I love seeing the excitement from a brand perspective, because I think that always shines through to the products and consumers can pick up on it. And when a brand's excited about a product and their products, then you know things are going in the right directions, and you're going to be getting good products from them. And I think like you're kind of saying too, it's, you guys are scratching, you're always kind of scratching your own itch. I think it's awesome with a lot of the brands that we see, at least in the ultralight space, the people behind the brands are, they're out backpacking, they're out hiking. I think we were talking about before the hike that you kind of aim for like a certain amount of mileage per year, which is like a pretty high amount for most people out there, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I think too, with this particular tent that we were talking about, like I was actually very unsure about it until I'm 6'2". Do I want the Duplex L? Would I switch out of that for this? And then finally I got to test it in Scotland in the end of April, beginning of May. And I was like, oh man, this is awesome. And then I went on a trip with my daughter. We did Isle Royale. We shared. So I slept two people on there, two wide pads. And I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is the real deal. So it's like, super excited about it.
Yeah, it looks great. I've been checking it out and looking at the photos and videos, and definitely I like the fact of the offset duo, the like you have space around the head end, because whenever like I'm sitting up, it's never like right kind of directly in the center, and then I don't really need as much space around the feet.
It's wild when you sit up. It's like the amount of space like here is I'm like, oh my goodness, this is great. And it's insane. And the fact that like you can sleep two people next side by side. And so it's like, it's pretty nice, but the offset trio, my friend, which is like being the latest version of it's being made right now. It's not even a month out probably, but you want to talk about a tent with internal space. Oh my God. The thing is a palace. Yeah. You'll like it. What is this going to, what? What is it? I don't have the number off the top of my head right now. I have to talk to Joe. It can fit, definitely can fit three wide pads side by side. I think four, and if you, 420s tapered, if you like offset them, like, is what the goal is. I don't know when this is going to air, but if it airs before it comes out, like, I'm literally thinking about making the advertisement for that literally look like an Airbnb listing or like a real estate. It's so big. It's like a house.
That's sweet. I don't think there'll be anything really like it, because like it sounds like you'd be able to fit kind of like two people on wide pads with maybe like a dog or like a child in there pretty easily. Which, yeah, nothing really out there. Probably in the weight that it's going to be coming in at.
No, 100%. Like that's. Like I said, I'm 6'2". My wife's like 5'9". Like if I was going to do like a long, long hike, like a traditional through hike with my wife, like that's what I would get. It's simply because like two wide pads, we don't have to be on top of each other. And like there'll be room for our gear, because it's like you got to hike. Doesn't matter how much you like somebody. One night, you're not going to like them that much. Or like it'll be hot. You don't want to be on top of each other.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Shifting things a little bit to packs, because we've kind of talked about the Arc Haul a little bit, or I've talked about the Arc Haul, because I've been using it a lot over the course of the summer, and I'm pretty smitten with it as far as just like what I think it brings to the table for a lot of people out there. I think it just kind of will be scratching the itch of people who may not be on like want to carry a little bit more weight in their pack. People who may have like a total pack weight in like the 20-30 pound range, or even like I just went on a trip where I carried almost 40 pounds in it, and it was handling that for me, no problem. I think it fit me really well and everything, so that it dealt with that. But I was curious, like when you guys are designing PAX. I think like ZPAX is, I'd consider you guys like an, like mostly an ultralight company. Is one of the things that you try to, one of the ways you try to approach things is to like get the weight down so you can introduce some features into a pack in order to kind of address some gaps in the market?
I would say the honest answer to that is like, we don't think that way. So what it would be, what does a pack that needs to do this job, what does it need, and how can we make it the lightest possible, right? And so like sometimes we'll have some inner discussions in the design meetings where a suggestion will be made to add a feature or like add a buckle so, or a loop so that we can make an ancillary item that you can attach or something like that. And sometimes the argument will be, oh, well, that'll add weight. And I'll have to be like, we have ounces and ounces of space between the closest competitor. Like, we can add a little bit of weight here and still be light and still like destroy a majority of the competition in terms of like weight here. So, but it's like, you know, sometimes in general, I think we still fight the same battle as somebody getting into ultralight hiking. It's like, I've seen it over and over, and it's happened to myself. Is like, you get into it and the pendulum swings and you just go too far. You're like, this is too light. I'm uncomfortable. I can't sleep. Right. And then you come back. And so then you're like, okay, I'm sleeping pretty good, but it's a little ahead of me. And then the swings get smaller and smaller. I think like our initial swing is always like, what's the lightest functional version we can get? And what is that optimal feature set? And so sometimes the extra frills are like, you know, we used to have a hydration port on the Arc Blast, but it's like a lot of ultra hikers don't use a platypus with like a hose because it's heavy. They got a smart water bottle. So it's like, okay, we don't need that feature. Like, right. We don't, some people still want it, but the vast majority of people are fine just with smart water bottles or whatever, you know, other water bottles. So it's like, yeah, it's a balance, but I think it's always about the lightest functional version with like the feature sets of everything you need and nothing more. Like that's always where we target.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I like the pendulum analogy because I've done that same pendulum swing back and forth. And I think for a lot of people out there they're trying to find where they land, maybe on the swing of the pendulum. Like me, if you kind of have 10 pounds in the middle as kind of like the ultralight, the randomly made up ultralight number, some people may swing a little bit heavier, some people may swing a little bit lighter, some people may swing down to like four pounds base weight or something crazy like that.
Insanity. Yeah.
And it sounds like you guys kind of like hang out in the pie on the ultralight side of things, but maybe a little bit of range because you have a few different products in there.
Yeah, I mean, you get hit. I would say that like the ideal customer probably is like 8 to 12 pound base weight, right? Like a 12 pound base weight is like still pretty low, but like some people are doing 6. So it's like, but I mean, you can do a 12 pound base weight without sacrificing basically anything. If you're fully committed to ultralight, like you've got every piece of your kit in an ultralight version, 12 pounds is like, you're not leaving anything at home for most people. So I think that 10 to 8 to 12 pounds, and I think 10 is like a great target, I think. You know, and there's no shame if you don't hit it. Because I've gotten down to like high sixes, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm not comfortable. Like I'd rather bring, you know, an extra 2 pounds and have comfort all day, every day, mostly at night. My sleep is, I get too cranky if I don't sleep well. So I'll bring a little bit of extra weight with my sleeping pad and my pillow, my inflatable pillow. It's like those things make a difference on the quality of my experience day after day.
Yeah. And I think I like that you said, like, people shouldn't feel bad about like not hitting a 10 pound or under base weight. I think for me, ultralight, it's more of like an approach. Like you said, like, is this piece of gear, am I approaching it with an ultralight mindset? What do I prioritize? Is it like, do I prioritize my sleep comfort? Maybe I'm carrying a little bit more weight with that. And then because of that, I want to keep my pack weight low. So I'm using like a lighter weight tent, which I can kind of deal with, maybe like a smaller tent or something that is single walled and things like that. It's, yeah. Like that's the approach that I take. And it's cool to see that resonates with you guys as well.
Yeah, we'll do a seminar or something like that at some events. And one of the things we really talk about is like, when you go out, you should feel comfortable and you should feel safe. That's super important, safe. And like, if you don't have a ton of experience, what's going to make you feel that way is probably going to be some more weight. But you should never, ever encourage anybody to go out on trail in a way that is going to make them uncomfortable or feel unsafe. It's like the experience is what's going to be like, I've got kind of like this, with exception of like rain gear and some medical like stuff in your first aid kit. If you got three trips and you don't use it, you probably don't need it, right? You probably don't need it. So it's like, go out on those trips and realize, oh man, I've brought this five times and I've never used it. Or it was like buried in my pack and I've just figured out how to get by without it, right? Like, but you're only going to get that with days on the trail, nights on the trail. And your level of experience will change what you think you need to make you comfortable and safe. And so I realized I need a big inflatable sleeping pad and an inflatable pillow. So I carry extra weight there. But like I don't carry much other frills. Like I'm pretty minimalist. I don't have double anything. I got one pair of underwear. I got one pair of socks to wear and like a pair of cold weather socks. Like I have nothing extra. And I layer all my clothes to stay warm. And because I figured out that works best for me. And I always blows my mind. This isn't judging, but people bring clothes to sleep in. I'm like, you're filthy. So you take off your filthy clothes, you're still filthy. And then you put on clean clothes, which you immediately get filthy when you lay down in. I don't get it. Like, for me, it's like, I'm not going to carry that extra weight and take up that extra volume in my pack. Right. But some people, that's what makes them feel comfortable.
I like my sleep system. I might be a little bit less filthy than you, though. It sounds like you're on the higher end of the filthy spectrum when you're out there.
I mean,
maybe it's the Florida weather. The Florida weather, the humidity, you're sweating, and
I always wear shorts, so my legs are always filthy, no matter where I'm at. They're always dust or mud, or it doesn't matter. We always got something. Yeah,
that's how I do it. As we're kind of wrapping things up, I have a couple more questions just to kind of get the lay of the, like your thoughts on the lay of the land. One question is more just about where ZPAX is going, as far as like we're seeing like ultra TNT fabrics kind of out there in the wild these days. Is that something that you guys are looking at?
No, that's short answer is no. They sent us some samples a little while ago. I mean, 8 months ago or something. And what's the nicest way to put it? We were not very confident in its durability. In our testing. So that being said, I'm almost assuredly that they've changed and modified that fabric 50 times since that version, but the weights just weren't going to come in anywhere near what DCF was. And like I said, we're made in the United States. If you gave us the material for free, our stuff would be expensive because of the labor. So that added weight is not going to, and there's no cost savings really for us to do it. And it's going to come in at a heavier weight and a questionable durability, I guess I would say.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of people are like kind of looking at TNT fabric as kind of like an in-between nylon poly and then in between DCF. But if most of your costs, if the cost can be the same, then like, yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
But so I would say, what would give me confidence in that fabric, not to try it, just be honest, is like, I would assume that Tarp Tent would not have launched an entire set of their tents out of it unless they had solid testing behind it. So, I mean, like, maybe their experience was much better than ours. So, like, I'm definitely not trying to shit all over that material. I'm just saying, like, we got an early version of it. We realized the weight wasn't going to be there. And for us and our testing, the durability wasn't there. So it just didn't make any sense for us, especially at a similar price point per yard. So
that makes sense. I'm curious to see kind of how it lands into the market, because like I'm having troubles kind of seeing where I'd use it over certain other fabrics, and like especially when I put myself in like a consumer's shoes, like if weight's a priority, then I'm probably gonna want to go with DCF, and if like price is a priority, then nylon and poly are still going to be significantly less expensive. So yeah, curious to see where I
I'm curious, because like you always like you gamble on some things and then you don't, right? And that's what, when we started using DCF, like if you want to humor yourself one day, go on Backpacking Lights forums from like 2011 and read what they were saying about the future of DCF as a tent material, that it'll never last, it's horrible. But like, and like now, as of right now in the Ultra market, it is like the best of the best, right? You know, there's some trade-offs and compromises with it, as with any ultralight stuff. So it's like, maybe TNT would be the next thing, and anybody who didn't gamble on it is going to look like a fool, you know? Who knows? You never know.
We'll see, yeah. the other thing I wanted to ask about was just around problems that could still be resolved, as like especially like packs and tents with ultralight, and kind of where we're going from here. Are there things that Z-Packs is looking at as far as like maybe the technology isn't there, there hasn't been a solution, as far as like where would you like see innovation happening?
Yes. Well, I think it depends on what segment you're talking about, I guess. I think if you were talking about backpacks, it would be, I wouldn't even say the fabrics so much, because the fabrics are pretty damn good and they're pretty damn light, especially the Ultra 100. It's like a really, really good fabric. It's super durable, super light. I'd say that maybe some of the padding, might not have been what you're expecting, but if there was a way to find more comfortable padding and a lighter weight, or the same weight, where like you were getting more cushioning to be able to maybe handle a little bit extra more weight with some comfort, I think in packs, that'd be something I'd like to see. And we are actually downstairs, I have a test running right now between two types of different foam, actually, where I have really heavy weights on them. I'm going to leave them there for a week and see what the compression looks like. But anyway, so that's there. And I think you could have touched on it in your video that I watched earlier today, is condensation on shelters, right? Especially with the DCF fabric, it doesn't breathe. It's a sheet of mylar. It's a giant plastic dome. So it's like our peak vents really do a lot to cut down on it, but there's just sometimes like you're gonna have to sleep out in the open in a grassy field with maybe some waters close, and it's, the temperature is changing, the dew point, it's like you're gonna get it, there's no way around it. But it's like, it's, is there a way, or a fabric, or a technique, or is there something that we can do, or that a technology that can come out that maybe can help minimize the effects of condensation that you typically experience in a single wall shelter that you'd be using for a long distance adventure? Because I think it's going to be really, really hard to beat what the Dyneema composite fabric tent material. We always have our head on a swivel. We're always looking for the next greatest, the best, whatever it could be to achieve the same quality function with durability at a lower weight. But nothing seems to be on the horizon right there, right now. But it's just like, what can we do? That's the main problem with this ultralight single wall shelter, is condensation. Regardless if it's still nylon or polyester.
And even double walled, like you're getting condensation kind of regardless. And I have troubles wrapping my head around kind of where we might see a solution. I'm curious to see where it goes, because like we're fighting like pretty strong physics with like humidity and temperature. And like I've had just like flat tarps out, and it's just like completely open underneath, but there's still condensation on both sides.
I just thought of this right now. Maybe we just solved the problem. Have you seen those tiny little inflators for sleeping pads? Like if there was a way to hook that up to your vent area and draw the vapor out through that. I haven't thought of that till just right now. But yeah, so it's like, but I wouldn't carry one of those things normally, but it's like, but yeah, I don't know.
There's technologies out there. It's even like Big Agnes was throwing like fairy lights in their tents or something. So like the merging of like electronics potentially with fabrics and maybe even some other technologies that may not be kind of as like traditionally part of like fabric and sew.
But if you can get the weight down low enough, right, and like the battery life, the rechargeability, or like what do you know, like there's got to be something. There's got to be something. But I think that's a good place to where we could see some improvement, because nobody likes to wake up with the inside of their tent soaking wet.
That'd be good, especially with the offset duo or the offset trio, because that's gonna have a lot of surface area. And I was testing out a big DCF tent and the other day, and it rained and there was high condensation area, and it took me like 20 minutes to wipe it all down, where it usually takes me with my Plex Solo, it takes me like 5 minutes.
It's luckily the way that we're doing our vents is like pretty surprised. Like when I first used, especially the duplex zip, when I first used it, was like, I was surprised, like, holy cow, like this really cut down tremendously on a condensation. I slept twice in situations normally I would have had a really wet tent and basically had nothing. But I mean, I've still gotten some here or there, especially with more than one person, and how to throw a dog in there. Oh my God, you get that thing where it happens sometimes with customers where like, it's in that situation where you're going to have high condensation and it starts raining and they're like, the rain's going right through the material. And it's like, the drops are knocking your own sweat right back on top of you, basically, or your own vapor right back on top of you. Yeah.
I've seen that comment a lot. It's pretty, like, you go to REI's, like, kind of like a store like REI, and look at their comments for tents, and like, every single tent has like a my tent leaks review because of condensation. It's pretty funny to see. But Matteo, I really appreciate you hopping on and talking about gear. I think we went off script a bunch of times and had some good tangents and conversations, which I always love, always appreciate that. So yeah, thanks for your time.
Yeah, no problem, man. I just try to be open and honest about what's going on and not pretend too much. Definitely not. I think I pushed the offset duo too much. I was excited about it, so I talked about it, but
That's okay. Like I love it. I'm here for it, and I'm pretty sure my audience and everyone listening is too. So
yeah. So yeah, I'm excited, man. But yeah.
So yeah, thanks, and have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, you too, man.